Representative Galvin, Representative Stat, Co-Chair Representative Johnson, Representative Tomaszewski, Representative Ortiz, Representative Cologne, myself, Co-Chair Foster. And just a reminder, if folks can mute their cell phones, we have one bill to get through this afternoon. That's House Bill 368. That is Electrical Energy and Energy Portfolio Standards. This is the first hearing of the bill, so we'll hear from the sponsor and as well as his staff and invited testimony, and then we'll set the bill aside. And so we also have with us Representative Co-Chair Edgman. And so with that, I'd like to ask Representative Rauscher as well as his staff, Mr. Craig Valdez, to please come to the table and put yourselves on the record and begin your presentation. Also online, we have Julie Este, which is Chief Strategy Officer for Matanuska Electric Association, along with a couple of departments, although I'm just seeing the RCA on here, that is Becky Alvey, and they are available for questions. So with that, Representative Rauscher, welcome to House Finance.
Thank you. For the record, Representative George Rauscher, District 29. I'd like to come over and thank you, Chair Foster and Chair Johnson and the committee members here on finance for hearing this bill. HB 368, an act relating to clean energy standards and clean energy transferable tax credits and providing for an effective date. In the wake of a looming gas availability shortage in the Cook Inlet Basin, critical for powering Alaska's rail belt from Homer to Fairbanks, this committee bill on clean energy standards and clean energy transferable tax credits serves as a cornerstone of Alaska's energy policy. It is an urgent and needed measure, pivotal for steering Alaska toward a sustainable and secure energy future. Among these challenges, and excuse me, my throat is very hoarse this morning, and I'm doing the best I can. This legislation not only signals a shift to a more diversified and resilient energy mix, but also establishes a strategic framework for economic growth and sustainable stewardship. By setting forth clean energy standards, we are crafting a blueprint for innovation and transition, guiding our state towards a needed energy solution that will broaden and help diversify energy and will keep Alaska economically viable. The introduction of clean energy transferable tax credit is a key feature in this bill, designed to act as a catalyst for investment in clean energy projects. This initiative is paramount importance as it opens avenues for leveraging private investment and free market in the Alaska energy sector. It creates a fertile environment for private-public partnerships, ensuring that the path to energy independence is both led by utilities and that it is a free market-based. Additionally, this bill acknowledges the role of our existing low-sulfur coal facilities, incorporating them into the broader framework of a clean energy solutions to enhance their contribution to Alaska's energy portfolio. As a conservative advocate, I highlight this bill's crucial role in stabilizing the market, essential for investors across sectors, including Cook Inlet gas, clean energy, manufacturing, and heavy industry. By establishing a consistent policy framework, we mitigate investment risks, ensure ratepayers aren't burdened by the extra costs. This legislation instills confidence among stakeholders, showcasing our dedication to a predictable market that attracts investment, advancing Alaska's energy transition and economic prosperity. I do call upon my colleagues and partners from all sectors to support this vital legislation. Together, we can establish a stable, diversified energy market that benefits all Alaskans, ensuring that our state remains a beacon of innovation, economic strength, and sustainable growth for generations to come. And right now, I'd like to turn this over to my staff, Craig Valdez, for a he's going to go through the sectional and then introduce any testimony that's coming forward.
Okay, thank you very much, Representative Rauscher. Mr. Craig Valdez, if you can put yourself on the record.
Yes, this is Craig Valdez, staff to Representative George Rauscher, House District 29. I will go through the summary of changes from version H to Y, and then works go through the sectional analysis as well. Change number one, this deleted the original subsection H on page 4, lines 12 through 20. This removed the voluntary opt-out provisions from the bill. This was decided to be unneeded by utilities to protect their ratepayers after other portions of the bill were completed, as the Clean Energy Standard does not have penalties or other included mandates that would force them to do it, so it was unneeded at the time. Change number two, new language is added in multiple parts, adding the term independent power producer. This added independent power producers to those who may receive clean energy tax credits. This also added the definition of an IPP on page 8, following line 16. Change 3, added a new subsection, C, on page 5, line 25, allows expanded generating capacity to existing energy facilities qualified for tax credits. This is added as typically on a project, expanding a project is cheaper than starting a whole new one, in the case of fixing diversion for hydro or other projects around Alaska. Change 4, there's a typo there, added a new subsection G on page 5, line 31, add schools as qualifying entities to apply for energy tax credits. Change 5, added a new subsection E on page 6, line 8, adds a bonus 1 cent per kilowatt hour for communities that qualify for PCE funds. This is on top of the base 0.2 cents kilowatt in the bill. This would allow communities that receive PCE adjustments to also receive that 1 cent kilowatt as well. Change 6, deleted page 6, line 31 through page 7, line 2, subsection D. This was a technical change that deleted language that would disqualify entities from receiving the tax credits if under a waiver. That was decided since the waiver included things such as war, acts of nature, that they should not be penalized under those circumstances. Continuing on, I will work on the sectional analysis as well for version Y. Section 1 adds to uncodified law, adds a new section to the uncodified law of Alaska, which establishes the purpose of this act, which is to set a clean energy portfolio standard for electric utilities, increasing percentage of their net electricity sales from clean energy sources. Section 2, AS4205381, introduces a new subsection P under AS4205381, setting a uniform service rate for the transmission of clean energy generated after July 1st, 2024. To be developed by the Rail Belt Electric Reliability Organization and subject to approval by the RCA. Section 3 amends AS4205780A to say that an integrated resource plan must now identify the most cost-effective strategies for the energy network to satisfy the clean energy standard as a whole. Section 4 amends AS4205785A by adding subsection 4 stipulating the construction of large energy facilities may not be detrimental to a load-serving entity's ability to meet the CES. Section 5, the Clean Energy Portfolio Standard. Section A adds to AS4205, establishing the Clean Energy Portfolio Standard and detailing percentages for clean energy sources with a gradual increase over a specified timeline. Subsection B allows a power purchasing agreement to be included when calculating clean energy standard percentages and sets qualifying components. Subsection C allows for energy produced by distributed energy systems to satisfy the CES. Subsection D bases the clean energy standard compliance on historical data and industry standards set by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. Subsection E sets out a counting system to track use of clean energy, verifying compliance, and to track energy consumption displaced by energy efficiency investments. Subsection F, the RCA will develop a proxy for net energy from displaced energy systems. Subsection G allows for clean energy standards to be met by energy efficient investments. including the consumer efficiency upgrades. Subsection H, directs RCA to adopt a minimum standard for transmission lines before the clean energy standards are required. 10 years for step one after lines are complete, and 25 years for the transmission lines built out to encompass the entire road system for step two. Section 4205905, reporting. Subsection A details required reporting requirements for utilities, including the submission of annual reports demonstrating compliance. Subsection D allows RCA to adopt regulations governing reporting requirements and to minimize costs and burden to load-serving entity. Subsection C allows RCA to investigate compliance with the standard. Section 4205910, Clean Energy Transferable Tax Credits. This allows for a load-serving entity to apply for the Clean Energy Transferable Tax Credit, set the credit amount to 0.2 cents per kilowatt hour, defines what entities would qualify. Subsection B defines facilities that would qualify a load-serving entity or independent power producer. Subsection C allows for new energy produced by expanded projects to qualify for credits. Subsection D allows for schools to apply for credits under this bill. And subsection E adds a 1 cent per kilowatt hour bonus in addition to a normal credit to communities that receive power cost equalization. Section 4205.915, waivers. Subsection A allows for and sets standards for the RCA to waive requirements of CES, lists the allowed events or circumstances outside of a load serving entity's reasonable control for a waiver. Subsection C sets standards for good cause of noncompliance. And 4205920, subsection A, exempts the individual load serving entities from compliance if the overall grid is meeting the clean energy portfolio standard. B allows for exemption for load serving entities from the first noncompliance period. And subsection 4205925, net billing. Subsection A sets standards for net billing and the export rate credit. Subsection B charges the RCA to establish regulations to set the export rate credit annually based on seasonal and time variations and other relevant factors. Section 4205930, additional energy resources, requires the AEA, Alaska Energy Authority, to submit a report at least every 5 years to the legislature to recommend if any new technologies are to be added to the definition of clean energy. In section 4205935, definitions. This section lists the definitions of terms used in this bill, defining clean energy standard, compliance period, distribution, distributed energy systems, independent power producer, interconnected electric energy transmission network, load serving entity, the rail belt, renewable energy resources, and transmission network constraint. Section 6, cost use calculate PC. This section amends AS 4245.110A to stipulate that revenue from recovered heat is not to be included. This is to set statute what is already being done in the RCA. Section 7, AS 4398, Clean Energy Transferable Tax Credit. The Clean Energy Transferable Tax Credit would be Article 5. Subsection A sets the foundation for a clean energy transferable tax credit, sets transparency standards for those provided a tax credit. Subsection B allows clean energy transferable tax credits to be sold, assigned, exchanged, conveyed, or otherwise transferred in whole or in part. Subsection C allows a credit to be used to offset taxes in Alaska Statute 10.25, which would be the electrical utility and taxes, and then Title 43. Subsection D instructs the Department of Revenue to adopt regulations necessary for administering the tax credits. Subsection E sets the requirement that clean energy tax transferable tax credit is used within 5 years. Subsection F restricts the clean energy transferable tax credit from reducing a person's tax liability below zero. Subsection G allows holders of clean energy tax credit certificates to combine or split their credits for transactions like sales or transfers. The department must issue new certificates for miners put credits detailing their amounts and expiration dates. This process doesn't extend the credit's validity period. Section 8, AEA and reporting new subsection. Sets Section B mandates the authority must submit an annual report to the legislature's first regular session detailing progress on rural clean energy development. This report should evaluate current initiatives, identify needed infrastructure, and assess the feasibility and cost of future projects. Section 9 is effective date clause.
Thank you. And you've got a presentation.
Most of that was already covered under the sexual analysis, but I'll go through kind of a shortened version of the presentation we did in House Energy as well. Kind of setting the standard, I think we have, for the most part, everyone has seen the Alaska's railroad energy landscape, the different sections, but in the north, we have Golden Valley Electric Association reaching down to meet Matanuska Electric Association's area, interconnected by the AEA-owned Intertie. This continues down to the central region, which is also Chugach Electric Association's area, reaching down into the Kenai Peninsula, which includes Homer Electric Association. So, this next slide, many of you are probably very familiar with this at this point, shows combined utility annual demands for natural gas coming out of Cook Inlet. Starting in 2028 and potentially earlier for Homer, the higher risk untracked demand for natural gas will start a large gap, increasing over time and having less and less natural gas for use. Important to note is natural gas is used for electrical generation for the rail belt as well as heating. Close to two-thirds for heating. And going on to the next, we want to talk about, as mentioned earlier, the cost of these tax credits. This was done by ASEP from UAF, showing a hypothetical model showing the tax credits, how many would be created. And they're estimating about $65 million in cumulative tax credits through 2051. At 0.2 cents kilowatt hour. A couple points from previous NSTAR presentations here and other committees. For the short term, none of the options currently on the table meet the LNG demands for the next 4-year milestones. The earliest they could do would be first gas in 2027. Some reducing gas as we go through increases that time frame, as every molecule of gas we don't burn now will be allowed to be used in the future, extending the life of Cook Inlet. The second point made by NSTAR was the second worst thing for Alaska is to import LNG, and the worst thing is to do nothing. So HB 368 is a proactive legislative measure aiming to establish a clean energy portfolio standard and introduce clean energy tax credits to leverage private funding and close those production gaps that are forming in the Cook Inlet. Diversifying Alaska's energy portfolio with clean energy sources not only extends the life of Cook Inlet's natural gas reserves for critical heating needs, but also offers gas producers a roadmap for the future, enhancing their capacity for strategic planning and investment, allowing them to plan long-term investments and how much gas they're producing, where it's needed, and as well as for NSTAR for importing. Bottom line, House Bill 368's impacts on Alaska's future. Energy security strengthens Alaska's energy independence by diversifying supply sources, reducing reliance on Cook Inlet gas. Economic growth, it stimulates the economy, creating jobs in the clean energy sector and attracting industries seeking sustainable operations. As many companies like Santos, mines throughout Alaska all have privately set goals for clean energy. Public-private partnerships, this encourages innovative collaborations, driving both clean energy initiatives and broader industrial development. and legislative leadership, showcases the last of the proactive approach to energy policy, setting a benchmark for sustainable and forward-thinking legislation. That was the end of the presentation.
Great. Thank you very much. We'll go to questions now. And so with that, we've got Representative Hannon, Representative Staff, Representative Ortiz, Representative Hannon.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Mr. Valdez, I apologize. These are probably very rudimentary questions from your perspective because you've been through this bill a zillion times. This is my first. But on page 3 of your presentation, you have a couple. One, IGU contracted. What's IGU? What?
Mr. Valdez?
Yes, for the record, that was staff representative Roucher. That would be interior gas.
That's interior gas. Okay. Are they a utility? Because before that, there's a utility map. So is interior gas a private company contributing to Golden Valley, or are they a separate utility?
They, at this time, are a utility providing gas.
Okay. And then follow-up question. Through the chair, Mr. Valdez, that chart on page 3 has a green code for uncontracted available Cook Inlet gas. Who's defined what's available? Is that already discoverable and recoverable, or what's the basis for available but uncontracted?
Yes, through the chair. From NSTAR's presentation, which is the source of this, that is gas that they, through DNR and talking producers, think is available within Cook Inlet, but is at this time uncontracted to them and unavailable for firm contracts, but they believe that is there and available. However, at this time, they have also stated on the record that they are looking for firm contracts, and that is why they are looking at imported LNG, which can be under firm contracts meaning for them that they will get a certain amount at a certain time with penalties without that available demand. So that is gas in the Cook Inlet, but just not contracted to them. Potentially available, but not currently so.
Thank you.
Okay. Got next up, Representative Ortiz.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And through the Co-Chair, Mr. Meldes, looking at your fiscal notes, and then there's a kind of an extensive explanation of the fiscal notes on the next page. Looks like if this bill were to pass, there would be nearly $500,000 in the first 2 years of the bill, and then an ongoing $176 million going forward. My question is, can you just kind of summarize what those costs are for me? In other words, how is it that they would occur this way?
Thank you. Correct, 486 in the first, and then just correct, it'd be the continuing 176,000. But yes, so the continuing costs would be for personnel services going forward. The early beginning costs would be from them setting up those requirements, developing the proxy and contracting for services. On the second page, you can see the vast majority in that services part is contractual support for regulation changes in 25 and 26. And that would be to adjust regulations throughout their sections, develop the net energy proxy to develop and oversee the, in section 6, I believe, the, one second, I can point it out to you. Detailing the reporting requirements, and then to adopt regulations governing reporting requirements and to minimize costs. So that would be kind of that redoing of regulations for them and to get the contracting services for that.
Follow up?
And generally, this bill, this, in its description or its title, it talks about tax credits, and your presentation included that term a number of times. Usually that implies tax credits implies less revenue for somebody. Who is it less revenue for?
So in the bill, It is less revenue for the state through Title 43. That'd be the credits, though those would be directly passed through to the ratepayers, which is typically every person in Alaska. Most every person in Alaska is a ratepayer. I think if you want a more detailed question, we can ask if they're still online. The Department of Revenue can answer that. But it's typically for Title 43, which would be the vast majority of taxes for the state of Alaska.
Representative Ortiz.
And at this time, it appears there's no estimate as to what those would amount to then?
The closest modeling, it'd be a modeling. And I think Department of Revenue is working on a new fiscal note to kind of get a better idea of that. But it's still based on modeling, on knowing what they might do. But ASAP predicts about $65 million in cumulative through 2051, as seen on this slide here. But again, that is something a model, not definite.
Thank you very much.
And we don't, at least I don't see Department of Revenue online. If there is somebody there, feel free to speak up. But who I do show is Curtis Thayer with AEA, Julie Estee, Matt Sioux Electric Association, and Becky Alvey with the RCA. So just folks know in case you've got questions. In the lineup, I've got Representative Stapp, Josephson Galvin, Representative Stapp.
All right. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. I have a few questions for you through the chair to Mr. Valdez. So regarding the transferable tax credits, this 2 and 3 cents a kilowatt that we're talking about, you referenced AS 10.25. So what is that actual tax number? So I know that you want to give a tax rebate of 2 cents per kilowatt hour or 3 cents per kilowatt hour. Out of what are they currently taxed at? Is it uniform would be the second aspect of that.
Just to correct, it would be 0.2 cents kilowatt, and then for PCA 1. 10.25 is the, off the top of my head if I remember right, the telecommunications and utilities tax section. Right now, that number that they pay actual taxes is extremely low. That was one of the reasons it was turned into a transferable tax credit, is effectively they would easily surpass that amount if they would do that. I think right now they're paying in the realm of $1.75 million in taxes, and that is an estimate to the state of Alaska through that, collectively, I should mention. And then the second part of your question, if you could rephrase that again.
Yeah, follow up, Mr. Co-Chair. So, okay, let's start there, because if it's $1.75 million a year, that graph is not even close to right. So, what if they're only paying $1.7 million a year, how could they possibly get a tax credit for $3 million a year?
Because it is a transferable tax credit, and they can transfer those tax credits to another entity under which would apply to anything under Title 43.
Follow-up, so, Mr. Trump. Sorry. So how do you transfer more tax credits than you pay in taxes?
So they would receive a tax credit through the Department of Revenue that they would have. At that point, they could sell, transfer, or move that tax credit to another entity that pays taxes in the state of Alaska, for example, an oil company, and they could then apply those tax credits to their taxes.
Oh, okay, now I get it. Okay, I have another one, Mr.
Representative Sepp.
Okay, that makes the bill a lot more understanding what we're trying to achieve. Okay, so my next question regarding the school districts through the chair. So I don't quite understand this, because this is where school districts paid these taxes. But in the bill, it says, let me reference it for you on page 5, I believe. Yeah, page 5, line 31. School district may apply for clean energy transferable tax credits under the section. And it says, regardless of whether the energy is sold to an unrelated person, the school district is entitled to the same amount of credit as a load-serving entity. What does that mean? I'm not an energy person, through the chair.
So this was added as a potential for certain school districts in the rural areas that some work with their communities to produce their own power. Some have talked about doing so in the future to relieve some of the extreme energy costs. I think in some districts in rural Alaska, up to 10% of their total budget is heating and electricity. This was added in the fact of if a school district chose to do so, this would be an option that they could either contract with an IPP or themselves build energy, distributed energy systems, which is typically rooftop solar or wind on their facilities. Do so, they could do so and receive those credits, and then again transfer those credits along to receive the cash value.
Yeah, a quick follow-up, Mr. Kocher, on this line, and then I'll keep moving on to my others.
Oh,
yeah, through the chair to Mr. Valdez. So that was kind of my understanding. The language here doesn't define where the school district is in subsection D. I do see the reference to PC in subsection E, but in subsection D, it says in this section, quote, school district means a city or a borough school district or regional education attendance area. So my mind, my thought, the practical example is solar panels on Lathrop High School, and then they could discount the power or maybe sell it back to GVA. Is that correct through the chair?
If the math worked out for them, that is an option they could do. And typically rural rail belt areas, that would be a little more difficult. But yes, effectively could if they chose to do so.
All right, my last one on the schools, Mr. Chair. Yeah, through the chair to Mr. Valdez. Okay, so regarding the section E, in terms of the 3 cents, if someone is receiving PCE, I guess we'll start simply. Do school districts currently receive PCE? I don't think they do.
So subsection E that we're talking about there is separate from the school part, correct? So they do not. Well, effectively, they do not.
Okay, so through the chair. So understanding that they don't receive PCE currently, this bill doesn't look like it makes them receive PCE, but it does say they get 3 cents if they're a rural school, transferable to 1 cent, which means they could sell the power so they could get the discount from their rural utility. Is that basically how that works?
Subsection D and E are separate sections on that. So going from a school, that is a separate subsection. Subsection E says that if you are a facility that qualifies for clean energy transferable tax credits under B of this section, produces clean energy for an electric utility, that you can receive an additional 1 cent kilowatt hour additional. So yes, if you happen to be a school in a district that in an area that received PCE, you could also do that. But is agnostic to whether it's school or another utility.
Okay, thank you. In my next line of questioning, Mr. Co-Chair, and then I'll stop monopolizing time. So through the chair, I see the waiver section to Mr. Valdez. I don't see any penalties in this bill, so what is the point of a waiver section?
So the waiver is when it comes down to the planning part of the bill. They could receive waivers under that. The waiver is mostly holdover from older legislation, but it still gives them an out if there's in the future an issue with planning or other sections.
Through the chair, quick follow-up, Representative Stout. I still don't understand through the chair to Mr. Valdez. What exactly are they wavering, though? So you said wavering planning section. So basically, I'll give you an example. My utility, let's say, they just don't want to do this. And, I mean, they just don't. Does that even require a waiver section? Because the way I read the bills, I only see that they don't get the tax transferable credit. What if they just choose not to do it? Are they forced to do the reporting through the bill?
So the reporting and other parts of that would be still required. But under this bill, there would be no penalty or leverage to require them to do so.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kocher.
Okay. Next up, we've got Representative Josephson and then Representative Galvin. Representative Josephson.
Yes, through the chair, looking at your sectional analysis, you mentioned in section 4205.925, new language here on page 7, the ERC, but I see an ECR. Is that what you meant? What is I see something called an export credit rate.
Yeah, so let me get to that section. So the export credit rate would be the amount they would receive for selling energy back into the grid.
Okay, follow up?
Follow up.
And so is this just a typo on the sectional where it says ERC?
Well, let me
at the top of page 3.
That is correct.
That's all I have written. Thank you.
Okay, Representative Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Foster, for the chair. I have a couple of different questions. The first one that comes to mind is more of an overarching one. I've heard from constituents saying, why did we move from
lowering our clean energy standards from why did we move it from 2040 to 2051? That a lot of folks are concerned about that. There's, I guess, a study from NREL out of Fairbanks where they had a plan for 70% by 2040, and I think this is moved to 60% by 2051. And, you know, I think Sarah Palin had it by, she was at 60% by 2030 or something. And so I'm just wondering what was the thinking about that first?
Just reference the NREL report that you mentioned.
Yeah.
Part of that is those are studies and reports. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're the ones having to pay the electricity rates for Alaskans. So I think that's always something to take with a grain of salt. Of how those are produced, and they make quite a few assumptions on how they get to those points. The reason those dates are chosen is twofold. Working with utilities, these are realistic goals that they can see themselves approaching. And then secondly, the way the bill is structured, that those dates are pushed back depending on when the transmission lines are completed. If the transmission lines are finished quickly, those dates would happen. The transmission lane takes longer, if for many different reasons potentially, those dates would be pushed them back to happen afterwards. One of the current issues with the Alaskan transmission system, mm-hmm. as I think you will hear with HB 307, some other bills coming up, is that they are certain areas very constrained and very limited in how much energy they can put through them. And so trying to move new sources of energy through those lines up and down simply wouldn't work. You would hit constraints on those lines.
Follow up, if I may.
Always.
So I think what I'm hearing is it's too much money. Like it would be too much money on the ratepayers to move us quickly enough to get there. That's what you're
that would be
suggesting.
Through the chair, that would be the risk, yes.
Okay, if I may, I have another question through the chair. Thank you. This is a letter that came to me dated April 5th from Chugach Electric. Now, they've listed 6 concerns about this bill. I wondered, and it's everything from concerns about the ERO. They want to see the remaining in the primary rail belt integrated resource planning entity that we don't have extra double doing. There's some things around Bradley Lake in here, double taxing on power produced by independent power producers, transmission issues or certificated utilities retaining the right to perform maintenance and undertake capital projects. And then lastly, it's around cooperative electric utilities and how they should be permitted to recover costs, especially ones associated with board-approved renewable energy projects. Has this been looked at and kind of worked through to make sure that one of our major utilities is at least we're responsive to them?
I do not believe we have received a copy of that letter. I don't know if that is publicly available. If you are able to share that, we appreciate that as well. But
happy to give you a copy in a few minutes.
I have not seen it at this time. And I do ask, is that from the board as a whole or members of the board or executive.
I think Representative Colomb can answer who that's from, but it is under the letterhead is Chugach Electric. So, oh, it is. So it would be Arthur. He is the ED there, the CEO, I believe. Okay, so thank you very much. I think those are my general questions because I'm not in the weeds as much yet, but I'll be studying up. Thank you.
If we could maybe get a copy for the entire Finance Committee. Thanks. Just also wanted to note that we also have Mr. Brandon Spanos online with the Department of Revenue in case anyone had any questions. Next question goes to Representative Cologne.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Through the Chair, I was I had a question around the summary of changes that you had. It's six changes. I was hoping for some, sorry, I've got a throat thing going too. Change one, it deleted the original subsection. It says this removed the voluntary opt-out provision from the bill. This was decided to be unneeded by utilities to protect their ratepayers after their other portions of the bill were completed. Can you just kind of give me some context around that? What is that talking about? And why can't they opt out?
Yes, through the chair. Kind of already covered with the questions from Representative Staff earlier, but the bill does not require penalties or does not include penalties or have requirements set forth under penalty of law that would penalize the utilities. And so at that point, there wasn't a need to allow them to opt out as they would not be forced or penalized under this bill.
I do a follow-up.
Follow-up.
So was in the original bill, were there penalties? So was that, were the removal of penalties an amendment or?
No, there was never penalties in this bill. There was, however, through discussions with stakeholders and with utilities that there was trepidation about the bill itself, and they wanted the ability to remove themselves, but through discussions and working through the language and understanding it further, that was seen as unneeded.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Do we have any further questions of the committee? Representative Galvin? Okay. Representative Hammond?
Thank you, Chair Foster. Actually, since we have Mr. Spanos from Revenue there, and there were some questions earlier that I was confused about the answers of, I guess I'd like to ask Mr. Spanos, what are the tax pay, how many of our utilities currently pay tax, and what's the volume of tax we receive off of utility paid taxes currently?
Mr. Spanos, can you put yourself on the record?
Yes, for the record, Acting Director Brandon Spanos for the Tax Division. And unfortunately, I don't know the answer to those questions off the top of my head. I'd have to get back to the committee on that. So as far as who the taxpayers could be, I can speak broadly to that. If the energy company is a C corporation, they would be paying our net income tax, the Alaska net income tax, that's applicable only to C corporations, or if they're an electric co-op, then they would be a taxpayer under the electric co-op tax.
Follow up.
Could you tell me what, through the chair, what is the, I'm interested in what electric co-op taxation produces right now for the state.
I can look that up for you. So in fiscal year 2023, the tax collected was $2.4 million. And of that amount, 48,000 went to the general fund, or about 49,000, and the rest of it, the 2.4 million, was shared to the municipalities in which the energy was generated. And the number of taxpayers in that tax type, so electric co-op taxpayers, there are 18 in 2023.
Thank you.
Okay. Representative Rauscher?
Yeah. Representative Rauscher, District 29, through the chair, Representative Galvin. If I could, this letter, the heading on it is subject Rail Belt Transmission Proposed Legislation, which this is not. It also talks about bills H217, H257, I'm sorry, SB257, and HB 307. This is referencing a different bill altogether, not this particular piece of legislation. So I just thought I'd make that comment while we're here on the record.
Okay, thank you. Okay, do we have any further, Representative Galvin?
Thank you. And I'm not sure if you have an answer to this, but I'm very curious because I know that in general, it's really important that we have a bill, an RPS bill. I think that is important, especially for oil and gas companies as they think about investment. They want to make sure that Alaska presents as a responsible state. I very much appreciate that. And so my brain keeps going from to 2051 to 2040, and I don't know what other states have done. And I'm hoping you can help orient me, even states like North Dakota, Texas, other oil and gas states where there is attractive maybe projects for investors. I haven't had this conversation with Santos. I think they would probably have something to say about this, and I don't see any letters of support from anyone in oil and gas. So if you have that information, or if there's someone on the line that could help me orient around that, because I keep thinking that 2051 sounds very late in the game to get us kind of on board with more renewable energy opportunities. And so that's what I'm hoping we can get an answer to, if you have one.
Through the chair, Representative Rauscher, District 29, Representative Galvin, I appreciate your concern, your question. I think the oil companies probably are not chiming in. It's not a bad thing. I think they have a different business going on, and they're trying to find gas in the inlet. The problem that we're facing in the state of Alaska is that the amount of gas that's available right now to us is in a decline. There are bills here in the state, in this legislature, that are enticing more gas, I'd say exploration, to bring into production, to make that happen. If you look at the history, sometimes it only lasts for 10 or 12 years, and we'll be back in the same position. Hence, this bill is to offset and diversify what we are experiencing every so often here in the state by encouraging other projects to come along. Hydro, there's a whole list of them, right? So anyway, we're trying to encourage all those. And what we'd like to do is find investors to come into the state of Alaska, provide jobs, provide projects, which are going to be brought in over a period of time. They won't happen tomorrow, or they'd be happening right now. Some, I actually want to say, are happening right now. If you listen to Governor Dunleavy talk about them, there are projects that are happening right now, but at the speed that we'd like to see that happen. I think this encourages more investors to come into the state and invest in some of these projects, which will take up the slack in some of that green area before we start looking overseas to find the gas that's needed. So if we can use these energy projects to cut back on the amount of gas that's needed to heat our homes, that amount of availability will still be there while we can utilize other methods to find energy, which is what I believe the governor wants from this thing, is to be able to show people in the lower 48, investors, big investors, to say that Alaska is looking to make things happen besides gas and oil. We're not getting rid of gas and oil. We're not getting rid of coal. We're allowing those to go as they are. But we're saying that we'd like to diversify, and I believe this is what this bill will do. It'll show diversification to those that are trying to invest in the energy sector. Thank you.
Representative Stout.
Thanks, you, Co-Chair Foster. I said a couple more questions for some of the stuff in the bill. On page 7, line 10, it says, the effect of the noncompliance fine on the load-serving entity considering the size or ownership of the load-serving entity. So, I don't see any fines in the bill, but the bill references waiver to fines. So does it give the RCA to establish regulatory authority to create a fine structure? Or is that just something that probably should be deleted from the bill, I guess, through the chair?
Through the chair, Craig Valdez. That would be something that should be deleted. Looks like it was technically left in as well.
Okay. And a follow-up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Representative Stout.
So through the chair, we have a renewable energy fund that funds projects. What this bill looks like to me, and it could be, I've been reading over it multiple times, is it is basically a cash credit for renewable projects. Is that a fair assessment through the chair?
Through the chair, slight clarification, but for clean projects, which is expanding from that renewable, including nuclear, coal, and other projects, but effectively, yes, is incentive to induce cash into those systems, yes.
And last follow-up, Mr. Roger. So if I understand it correctly, basically, let's use the example that Representative Galvin was referencing. It's Shovel Creek. That's probably why that says we would have the target. I don't think Shovel Creek's going to be able to be built in that time frame, but that's another matter through the chair. So I build a giant wind farm. Let's say it's a 150-megawatt wind farm. I sell my power to GVA and Fairbanks. I accumulate this percentage of money, 2 cents, 2/10 of a cent per kilowatt, and I get, let's say, $50 million in tax credits over the course of time. I can thereby sell those tax credits to, let's say, Hillcorp, and they can use the $50 million to offset their, say, production tax. Is that how this would work through the chair?
Very simply, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Next up, we have Representative Colm.
Thank you, Chair. Through the chair, I just wanted to follow up with what DOR just said. So if I wrote it down right, $2.4 million in taxes were collected. Only $49,000 go to GF. The rest went to the municipality. So is this something that's taking from the municipality share?
No, these tax credits would only be affected towards the state tax, towards state taxes, from my understanding of them.
Okay, is it a follow-up?
Hello?
Is there something that stipulates that in the bill, that it's only the state share, or is that just, and just an understanding that it doesn't come to the it doesn't come out of the municipality share?
From my discussion with the Department of Revenue, it would be my understanding of that's how it works. We can ask the department to clarify that, but from my understanding, that is the intent of how it's written. I don't think it explicitly states that, though.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Stapp and then Josephson.
Thank you, Co-Chair Foster. Sorry to ask so many questions through the chair. So here's my next one. Let's say I am ConocoPhillips, and I have a subsidiary that builds a giant windmill in Matsu. And I get a bunch of federal money through all the federal programs to build these renewable energy products. And I bring it online, and I create the power. And then I sell all the electricity to MEA. And then I can basically just discount all my other forms of taxes that way. Is that correct through the chair, that scenario?
I don't think Alaska uses enough electricity to offset that amount. And part of that is also to create those contracts with MEA, you would have to come down below their avoided cost. So effectively, you would be creating cheap energy for MEA, and through the business creating that, if they create a subsidiary to do that. That would be a free market approach to that as well, but effectively, yes.
Okay, thank you.
Hey, Representative Josephson.
Through the chair, several minutes ago, Mr. Valdez, there was someone mentioned doing more, there was reference to diversifying with coal, but it strikes me that this does more than diversify with coal. It sort of invites coal production, and I wonder if this is meant to run part and parcel with CCUS in connection to coal, something the commissioner of DNR noted twice. Is this meant to be a way to heat our homes with coal, but to assuage our constituents that it's okay because we're going to capture the carbon and inject it underground?
To the chair, to Representative Josephson, I would say that the way the bill was originally written to include coal is to make sure that we, while diversifying your electrical generation due to gas shortages, we weren't also encouraging or forcing utilities to get rid of generation that's already happening. Right now, EPA hasn't certified a new coal plant in the U.S. since 2013, I believe. They might, under current regulations, allow new coal plants with CCUS technology. So that is a question for the EPA and for the utilities to work out. So under this bill, that would be an allowable technology. However, it does not mandate or suggest that is what would happen.
Follow up.
Is coal bed methane a subset of coal? And I ask that because long before I arrived here in the aughts, the Mat-Su was gravely alarmed and people's careers ended over the controversy involving coal bed methane, particularly in the Mat-Su. Are they one and the same?
I would have to get back to you. Through the chair, I would have to get back to you on that question.
And follow up?
Follow up?
Representative Galvin mentioned the Palin-era reform that no one talks about anymore. And I think it was 50% by 2030 or something. Why is this bill the answer when that bill wasn't?
Through the chair, Representative Josephson. This bill, instead of includes incentives, first off of, and then also it comes on a point when the market is acknowledging that direction already. It works with utilities to lead, but also incentivizes them to grow that direction. Technology has changed. We can look at past projects in Alaska that have much lower capacity factors that have now changed in technologies to be more efficient, cheaper, and we believe this time that those factors altogether will create more of a change in those aspirational goals set forth during the Palin administration.
Thank
you. Representative Edgman.
Yeah, just a slight add on to the comment made by Representative Josephson. It was 2010. It was the Parnell administration, and it was a bill that created an uncodified section, a bunch of aspirational energy goals, percentages, and so forth that, by and large, has been pretty much a guiding force, but not in codified language that the principal portion of this bill is in.
Mr. Valdez?
If I could add on to what Representative Edgman said, part of the bill is to create integrated planning. And with integrated planning, part of that process is looking at the system as a whole. And part of that is included in this bill. I believe under Section 3, Subsection A, an integrated resource plan must identify the most cost-effective strategies for the interconnected electric energy transmission network to satisfy the clean energy standard. And this would be one of those things where they would create planning under that, which would include new clean energy as well.
Thank you.
Is
I believe it was Representative Hannon, then Stapp and Galvin.
Thank you, Chair Foster. Representative Stapp's question a while back has me rereading the tax credit, transferable tax credits, and in reading it, first, when I first read the bill, of course, I'm thinking of energy and oil industry. Now I am reading it, and is my read correct in that it can be transferred to any taxpayer who is paying any kind of tax to the state, whether it's oil production tax or Alaska Airlines corporate tax?
Correct. So it'd be, through the chair, President Hannon, it'd be a title, any tax under Title 43 as well as 10.25, I believe.
Okay, so any taxpayer. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
So that's probably part of the problem of why revenue can't produce a fiscal note, because there's no limit on who could gather those tax credits, and they could buy from a variety of utilities from any producer of this and stop paying any kind of tax. It could be rental car tax. It could be corporate tax. It could be oil production tax. All right. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Stapp.
Yeah. Thank you, Co-Chair Foster, through the chair. So on page 8, to Mr. Valdez, clean energy means electrical energy. I see load serving unit does not release carbon dioxide, and then the subsection B is generated from coal with a sulfur content of 1%. What about syngas? So that is gas that is generated from coal as a byproduct. Does that qualify under this section of the bill, or is that something people might be amenable to? I'll contextualize that. There's a project that folks in North Pole, basically, they want to build something and put all the stuff in a greenhouse and grow plants, right, through the chair. So basically they want coal created, converted to syngas, which is synthetic gas from coal, and they want to power stuff, and they want to take the carbon dioxide and grow plants in a greenhouse. Does that count through the chair?
So one of the issues, through the chair, Representative Stapp, one of the issues Alaska faces with energy and with coal in general is that they're any project of any particular size is regulated under the federal government. Under our bill, by blush definition, yes. However, those projects would have to make it through FERC and through EPA regulations, mm-hmm. which is the main issue that coal in Alaska has faced since the last coal plants were produced. And again, within the United States, the EPA hasn't allowed a coal plant to be built since 2013.
Through the chair, to Mr. Valdez. Yeah, no, I know that. I appreciate that. Although I think the university plant's a little older than 2013 or newer than 2013. But my question was just referencing the tax incentive, basically. They would qualify for that under this bill, even though it was syngas, in the event that, of course, they got permitted through FERC and NEPA and all that. So,
through the chair, I believe so. I'm happy to check.
Okay.
Go through that and find out that it in fact does.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, Representative Galvin.
Yes, thank you. I'm navigating various letters from constituents who are concerned about their direct electric costs and whether or not that's going to be negatively affected. I presume that the goal is to get more cheap renewable energy in play that will ideally lower our costs. I'm hoping you can speak to that. And also they're concerned about growing more government. Apparently there's concern. I'm looking at the fiscal note, and I do see that there is some, it doesn't sound like too much, GF. I guess looking at the complicated tax credit system, it's almost hard to believe that it's not going to need a bit more help on the revenue side in the tax division. But also, how the unpredictability of how much we're giving up is a concern. So I wonder if you would address those. So the cost to the ratepayer, and maybe something around growing an extra layer of a couple of pieces, not only what we're having to have in revenue, but also I think there was an ask for an additional board of some sort. So if you could address that, that would be great. Thank you.
So to the chair, to the representative's first question for cost, I think one of the good pieces of information to look at is the Alaska Energy Security report that was done last year. And the second item on that list was the creation of a clean energy standard to address energy costs in Alaska. I don't know if every member of the House has one. I know the AEA was passing them out last year, but I'd be happy to provide one to the committee as well. And again, for cost, part of the way this bill works is it still relies on utilities as still the owners and operators of the electric grids that ratepayers work through, that they still have that duty to provide electricity reliably and affordably, and that is who is still going to be in control of those power and still making those decisions based on the boards. To your second point with growing government and then as well as positions, I think the RCA fiscal note had two new positions in it. Then for your comment regarding the transferable tax credits, I believe the Department of Revenue has answered this question in a different committee, so I think they should be able to provide us an explanation better than I could on how that would work and their thought process on navigating that transferable tax credit system.
Representative Galvin.
Thank you. If I may have if they are on board, what I also would like them to address is I'm looking at a policy analysis by Cassie Andrews dated March 25th of this year. And it's part of KVNT radio discussion, the policy analysis where they rate energy bill scorings. And this particular, at this time, and we may have a new CS since then, but at this time, I guess, I'm guessing neutral means they're neutral. And then it goes to the green all the way up to 9, and then the red all the way to minus 9. And this particular entity rated this bill at, or I guess the outcomes of this bill at minus 7 for energy bill scoring. So it would be helpful, I think, for us to have a little bit deeper dive, if we could, into that, unless you already have an answer for that, which I'd be happy to hear.
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, I don't think we could comment on a third-party blog or other person outside on what they rate things. I haven't read that personally as well, but okay. I do believe that the department can answer some of the Department of Revenue can answer the other parts of those questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Spanos, are you there?
Again, for the record, Acting Director Brandon Spanos for the Tax Division. Mm-hmm. If I could have the question repeated.
Representative Galvin.
I think the main question, well, there are two. One is this seems pretty complicated, and I know that your tax division is pretty lean and efficient. And I guess there are some concerns around whether this kind of sounds like a lot of traffic might be happening in tax division with a bill like this. And it's at least as far as I can tell, you have, looks like maybe one position that would be doing this workload. So I'm concerned about that, number one. And number two, I was also thinking through whether or not we're adding in more layers of, which I don't think you can address, actually. This whole piece of the other board, I don't think you would address. So this would just be around, is one PCN enough, looking at the complications of this revenue has none. Where's the PCN here? This is, sorry, that's in, looks like energy or regulatory commission only. So you're saying you can absorb this. Is that correct?
So through the chair, Representative Galvin, we did teeter on that in trying to determine how much of a cost it would bring to the state or to the Department of Revenue. If you the revenue fiscal note for the CS, we've concluded that we could absorb it, but it is at kind of at the limit of what we think we can absorb a little bit more, and you know, it's the last straw that we would need an additional person. And I did put that in the analysis section. I noted that if the bill were expanded and more credits were created or beyond what's currently projected, that we would need at least one additional staff person. The reason we believe we can absorb it is we think we can automate a lot of the process. The credit would be claimed by a taxpayer that that has purchased a credit certificate. And in the past, there was a program similar to this, and it was the film credit. The film credit worked very similar, where most of the credit was created by a non-taxpayer entity, and then the state became a quasi-broker that would then have the certificate holder connected with a taxpayer, and the taxpayer would purchase the certificate from the certificate holder and then would claim that certificate on their tax return. Most of that in that era was done manually, and it was a significant burden. We believe that we can automate the certification process through our revenue online system, and then also automate the claiming of the credit through the tax return filing process. And so we believe we can absorb it, but a lot of that will have to do with how many times they want to split credits, reissue credits, and how much of that we can actually automate. But we also don't want to ask for positions that when most of the work can be automated.
Thank you, Director Spanos. I do have a follow-up with that. I'm just looking at this fiscal note alone, which is pretty complicated, and it's all about the tax credit system that you would be setting up. My question for you is, you believe that just setting that up electronically is something that won't take any extra resources? The setup alone is, you've got that? You can absorb that?
Through the chair, Representative Galvin, the reason that we would be able to set it up with existing resources is because we already pay a significant amount to Fast Resources, who is the third-party contractor that's on site to maintain our system. And we have several Fast Resources on site that are there to implement changes like this. In the past, we had to add costs for every fiscal note for what we would consider small to medium changes. But because we have those in our base budget now, we do these small to medium changes at no cost because the cost is built into our budget.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do we have any further questions? Seeing none, I think we've thrown pretty much everything at you but the kitchen sink, and it's only round one, but great job and I guess bringing us up to speed and getting us informed. Representative Rusher, do you have any closing comments, or Mr. Valdez?
Yes, thank you, Chairman Foster. Before I go, and I want to thank the committee for the discussion, but I sat on the governor's energy security task force along with a senator from the other side. We put together 1,800 pages. Basically, this book is the condensed version, and it's basically a condensed finding. The rest of the other 1,600 pages are how we got there. And I would like to say that number two of the most important things that we came up with on that committee of many, many individuals, they were utility, they're represented by the utility companies, they're represented by the governor's office, they're represented by all kinds of people, walks of life, whether they're in the private sector or the public sector. And number two in A2.1 is incentives and statutes. Adopt a clean energy standard with incentives to diversify generation was one of the main things that they came up with after spending an entire summer. I spent 170 hours in meetings. I know there were others who spent more time, because they spent more time finding that information than I did, just listening to it. So there was an awful lot of effort going into this. I believe the governor had a task force for a reason. He saw this coming, and now he's trying to do something to head off what he sees that could be a very big problem for the state of Alaska if we don't address it. So I just wanted to close with that statement, if I could. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you. Representative Benjamin?
Yeah. I have a question on page 1462.
Okay. Great. Well, with that, our next scheduled House Finance Committee meeting is Tuesday, April 9th. That's tomorrow at 1:30 p.m. We have two bills scheduled. That's House Bill 307, that's Integrated Transmission Systems, as well as HB 154, the Green Bank Bill. A little bit of a caveat, I suppose, and that is that we do have amendments on the floor tomorrow. So if it looks like things are going long, it's possible that we move these to another date. So, or if time permits, then maybe we push it off to later in the day, but don't want to go late in the day for sure. So with that, the House Finance Committee meeting will be, already mentioned that, and so we will be adjourned at 2:49 p.m. Thank you.